Hey everybody, it's Dora Seiler with Prestige Property Shop, also known as Dora the Real Estate Explorer, coming to you from Central Florida. And today we're talking all things real estate, specifically qualifying a buyer, finding out what their purchase power is, and if lending requirements are going to change now that we're moving out of this COVID-19 pandemic that we have been in. And I'm actually going to have a guest, Mike Smalley with Waterstone Mortgage. He's one of my preferred lenders. More importantly, he's a Yankee fan.
Yes.
That's why I love him. We often talk Yankees more than we talk files. No, not true. Anyway, so when a buyer comes to me and says that they're ready to purchase a home, the first thing I do is bring them into my office and have a buyer consult. And that gives me an opportunity to talk to them about what the process is going to look like and what's involved and what the costs are going to be. And part of that conversation is getting a pre-approval.
And also probably they have to have realistic expectations.
And
everybody would love to live in Occoquan Lakes, but can you afford it?
Exactly. And that's where getting a pre-approval is really step one. So I'll get them with one of my preferred lenders. They can use whoever they want, but I need to know, and they need to know, how much money are they going to need down? What are their closing costs going to be? If they have any issues with their credit, we want to find out soon, because a lot of times those red flags come up, those can be repaired, and we find out early. So,
and you want a pre-approval letter before you do make an offer anyway, right?
Well, you have to have a pre-approval letter when you make a contract, when you present a contract. I will not even show property to someone if they have not already been pre-approved with the lender.
Oof.
I know, I'm tough. I know, but you know, you learn those lessons.
Your time is valuable.
Exactly. Well, and what I'm trying to do is avoid a disappointment for a buyer who really can only afford $275,000, and we're looking at homes that cost $300,000, and they love it, only to find out, oh, they really can't afford it. And that only leads to a disappointment down the road. So I'm trying to prevent that. So a couple of things. We're going to get Mike on the phone here in just a couple minutes. And wanted to also kind of mention my new listings that are coming up. And they'll be live next week. I've got several townhomes and one condo. And they're all under $200,000. Really perfect for those first-time home buyers. So if you're interested in that, give me a call. And my number is 407-493-4959.
Is it a tiny home?
They are not tiny homes, actually. They are townhomes and condos. Townhomes, by the way, are financed differently than condos. And that's another subject. But anyway, so I want to get Mike on the line. And he's actually going to tell us where he feels interest rates are coming. So welcome Mike Smalley from Waterstone Mortgage, and more importantly, Yankee fan.
Big Yankee fan.
Hey, Mike, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm really good. So I was just explaining that step one in my process is to make sure that a buyer gets pre-approved with a lender. And the reason why I use you is because your process is so thorough from the beginning. And I know when I get a pre-approval letter from you that you've seen their docs, you've pulled their credit. We really, and that helps us avoid a problem down the road. So what I'm really curious about, and I'm getting asked this a lot, how is the qualifying and the lending process possibly going to change now that we're moving out of the pandemic, and, or is it going to change?
So great question. If I looked at 100 pre-qualified buyers pre-COVID, kind of like what the mortgage rules were, you know, let's say 2 months ago, probably somewhere around 80 or 85 of those would still qualify today for the same program they qualified for back in, let's say, mid-February.
Okay.
So of the 15 or 20% that might not qualify for the same program, probably half of them could qualify for something else. So maybe the program that they started in, if that program is no longer available for whatever reason, there's still probably something else out there. So we think somewhere between anywhere from 85 to 95% of buyers, and that's going to vary depending on the area and what that area's unemployment rate looks like. But 85 to 95% of people who qualified still qualify. A few of them, it might be a different program, but most people who qualified still do. The biggest changes for us is not really program or product related. There's some tightening. Minimum credit scores seem to have gone up, and some jumbo lending stuff has changed. But the biggest challenge, obviously, is unemployment. So if somebody didn't have a job pre-COVID, obviously we couldn't use that person's income to qualify. And that's the biggest challenge today, when we've gone from 4% to, you know, who knows, 15, 20%, maybe more unemployment. That's really been the big challenge. It hasn't really been mortgage program related, just overall massive increase of unemployment. So as we come out of this, we think that we'll probably start to see things getting back to normal as we start to go back to work. And thankfully in Florida, we seem to be ahead of most of the country. So it should rebound faster for us, because the unemployment situation hopefully here starts to work itself, you know, back to normal here in the next couple weeks and months.
So let me ask you. So let's say that I had a 9-to-5 W-2 job pre-COVID, and for 8 weeks now I've been furloughed and I had to collect unemployment, but now I'm going back to work. What does that look like through the eyes of a lender?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So my answer is going to be what I think it's going to look like, because we're still waiting on clarification from the agencies, which will be Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, for example. So what we think that's going to look like is, as soon as you're back to work, it's like you didn't even have a gap.
Awesome.
I use it like maternity leave. So let's say someone takes maternity leave. Let's say they have 90 days off of work. The second they're back to work, it's like they never left.
Okay.
So we think that this, as soon as somebody goes back to work, it's going to be back to normal. I think it will vary a little bit depending on if you're salaried or if you're hourly, because if you're hourly, we might need a pay stub to show how many hours you're working. And we'll probably need something from your HR that says you're back to work and what that back to work looks like. Is your pay the same? Are you working full time? Things like that.
And you guys, from the lending standpoint, you guys always call the day of closing or the day before to confirm employment, correct?
Yeah, that's been one of the biggest, I would say, kind of guideline or process changes. So pre-COVID, for most programs, we had to re-verify somebody's employment within 10 days of closing.
Okay.
Early on, that changed to 3, and it's really still 3. But in some cases, if it's considered what's called a high-risk industry, which, you know, really like what isn't right now, some companies are doing the day before or even the day of.
Right. That's what I've seen lately. Okay, awesome. So I think overall that's pretty good news. So where do you see interest rates going as we're headed into the summer? Because what I think is going to happen, the activity that we would have seen February, March, April has been slightly delayed. And now I think I'm going to be going crazy June, July, August. And so where do you see interest rates headed?
Yeah, so we think that rates are going to be relatively flat to slightly lower in the mortgage world, and not necessarily interest rates with treasuries or things like that.
Right.
But we think that mortgage rates are going to be tend to be slightly flat, which we're kind of in that low to mid threes range.
Right.
To slightly lower. It's probably been a month or maybe 5 weeks now. The Federal Reserve announced that they're instituting another round of quantitative easing. And I know a lot of the media kind of jokingly called it QE infinity, which meant they're going to do it, you know, as long as they have to. And so early on in this crisis, there was a lot of volatility. The Fed stepped in. QE basically means they're buying mortgage bonds, which is a way for them to drive interest rates down. And early on, they drove rates down to the point where we got into that low threes range. And it felt like they were going to push rates further. And the mortgage industry as a whole said, hold on. We need to catch our breath. We can't keep up with the amount of activity that's going on right now. And I think the Fed listened to that. And there's a lot of kind of behind the scene things that caused that. But so the Fed kind of pumped the brakes a little bit the past couple of weeks, and things are just flat right now. We're in that 3.25, 3.5 range. But yeah, we expect you're going to see rates in that range to potentially lower.
And Mike, you can't get, they can't,
the summer.
I don't see that they can go much lower only because, I mean, they can go, yes, they can go to 3% maybe, but think about this. As you're, if you're an investor, do you really want to tie up your money, take that kind of risk 30 years to make 3% on your money? I mean, it's crazy. I just can't see rates going down in the low twos or mid twos or anything like that.
Yeah, I think Lee's probably the lowest you're going to see is like an opportunity. I agree with that. The spread between a treasury and a bond and a mortgage bond has widened out a little bit right now. And I think part of that is the fear of if I buy mortgage bonds and we have a high foreclosure rate,
right,
then those things become even less valuable. So I don't think you're going to see rates. Like a lot of people say, when the economy starts to rebound, that interest rates should go up. I think the economy, when it rebounds, rates are going to tick down a hair because there will be more confidence in investors buying mortgage bonds because the fear of, is there going to be a large amount of foreclosures, which would make those assets less valuable. I think that goes away a little bit. But yeah, there's only a certain floor where they can go, and it's not a lot lower than it is today.
All right. And the other question that I want to ask you, because people, in fact, I got a phone call last night from a customer who said, you know, 3 years ago, she bought a property at 4.25% and she was quoted 3.25%. What's your criteria that makes it worth someone doing a refinance on their home where you feel it's worth it?
Yeah. So there's two ways you typically do it. You would do either a refinance to reduce your payment, or you would do it to reduce your term. And I think the mistake most people make is a lot of times they look at payment savings, but what they don't really think about is, I don't care what your payment difference is. I care what your interest difference is, because your payment, you have principal. So when you're deciding if you should refinance, you really need to look at, what am I saving in interest, not necessarily what am I saving in payment, if that makes sense.
So let's say that, and this customer specifically was worried about her monthly payment, and
right,
she's going to be there, you know, I mean, rule of thumb that I have always heard from lenders is, if you can save 1% and you know you're going to be in the home for at least 4 to 5 years, where you can make those closing costs back, is that still the rule of thumb?
I'd say generally speaking, if you're going to be there 3 years and you're going to save 1%, it probably makes sense.
Yeah,
if you're going to be there 3 years and you're going to save 1%,
okay,
it probably makes sense. But
okay,
if your mortgage amount's higher, or maybe you have PMI now and that can go away, that could be less. And then again, if your mortgage amount's smaller, you might need to be there longer.
Okay.
So if someone's trying to save money, what I normally look at is, what's my interest cost reduced by each month? And then I compare that to my closing cost and figure out, what's my break-even time? So that could be 18 months. It could be 27 months. It could be 32 months. But that would help a homeowner decide if it makes sense or not, is figuring out, what's my interest expense? What are the closing costs? How many months to break even? I'm a big fan of shortening the term. And I don't see a lot of people doing 15 years, because that's a more significant increase. But I'd say the most common refinance I have is someone who bought a house 3 to 5 years ago and they put 5 or 10% down. So they may still have PMI, but I have a number of those people that are going from low fours to low threes, going from 27 or 26 years down to a 20-year loan.
Okay.
And keeping the payment basically the same. So knocking out 5, 6, 7 years without really a change of cash flow. And I see a lot of people doing that right now.
So Mike, okay, if they don't refi, but they want to stick to 30 years because they're afraid, hey, what if something happens to my job? What's that? I know that if you make a 13th mortgage payment or one extra mortgage payment per year, what does that knock down your term on a 30-year?
Yeah, it depends on what your interest rate is. Maybe, you know, 2 or 3 years, maybe 4 years faster.
Okay. Okay.
So you're basically paying, you know, 8% more. So you figure 8% more, 8% of 30 years is like 2.4 years. It's probably a little bit more than that, but maybe 3 years, three to four.
All right. Well, I just want to let everyone know how much I enjoy working with you, Mike. I tell my customers when I give your name as a referral that your office works as a machine, and the transactions are so smooth, and I think it's because you do the work up front, and so I so appreciate you. Mike, if someone wanted to get a pre-approval or talk to you about a refinance, what phone number would you want them to call?
Sure, yeah. And Dora, thank you for the compliments. I really appreciate it. And the feeling is mutual. I love working with you guys. And there's a lot of realtors in the community, but there's not nearly as many professionals in the real estate business as there are people that might hold a license. So anyway, the feeling's mutual.
I appreciate that.
And Lee, you're a pretty awesome guy too. And the fact that we're all Yankees fans is even better.
That's so, even better. That's really what it's about.
Yeah. And if you're a Red Sox fan listening, don't be mad at us. It's, it's a friendly rivalry. But my number, so my cell number is 407-367-9190.
And what's the office number?
It's 407-645-6300.
And his staff is so awesome. I love working with your girls too. So they're awesome to work with. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate you being my guest today, talking all things lending, and go Yankees.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
That was Mike Smalley, Waterstone Mortgage. He's quite successful here in the Central Florida area, and just really the type of lender that is going to talk you through your options. And that's really, again, going back to what I do in the very beginning, is a buyer consult, and knowing what your options are up front are super important, and what monies we might possibly need. So the interesting thing is, Lee, when we find out what your down payment's going to be and what your closing costs are going to be, when we present an offer, the only thing we can ask for from a seller is a contribution towards closing costs, never the down payment. Now, grandparents, parents, siblings, those type of people can gift funds towards your down payment, but never towards the closing cost. The seller can only contribute towards closing costs. So that's something that we oftentimes will ask, but we don't always get. And it really depends on the deal, how many offers are on the property, what type of property it is, if it's, and if it's something where the buyer has to have help, it is what it is. Right. But that's always why we want to know upfront. So anyway, I really appreciate Mike. He's a great lender,
and rates are low, historically low. The lowest in history. And if you need to refi, or you're looking to buy a new house, it really, timing as far as mortgages really couldn't be better.
And I think, we were talking about this last night, that the difference between 3.25% and 3.125% or 3% is really not that much money on your monthly mortgage payment. And it's so hard to time the absolute low. But a couple years from now, if we're back in the high fours, you're going to think 3.25% is fantastic.
I mean, historically, a 5% mortgage was low historically until the recent years. But I remember buying our first house was 9.5%.
And we got bond money, and we thought that was awesome.
Yeah, and that was low.
But you know what I thought was such great news is that they're treating this furlough and this temporary setback in employment as not truly a loss of job, as long as they go back and they're going to look at it as continuous employment. And that's huge. I think that's going to help so many of my buyers.
But unfortunately, though, if you've lost your job for 2 months, you may have had to live off of your down payment.
Exactly. And that's what's going to be really interesting. I think I'm going to be super busy this summer. I think people who have been living together and maybe are going crazy may not want to live together anymore. So I think
perfect.
There might be some moving with that. Also, I think people maybe that have been living technically above their means might be thinking now might be the time to downsize so that we reduce our monthly expenses in case this ever happens again. I think it's been a real wake-up call for people that they don't want to live above their means.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand. So you're looking for the divorce people.
Exactly.
And you're looking to buy some tiny homes.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, tiny homes we're going to do a show on. But next week.
That is fascinating.
It is fascinating. I'm fascinated by that because I think you would drive me crazy.
I could never live in a tiny home.
If we lived in a tiny home. But next week, I'm actually going to have an appraiser, and it's going to be Ask the Appraiser. And I encourage you to call in. And you You know, prepare your questions next week. I'm fascinated by how properties get appraised because it's completely an opinion. And just so you know, and I find this, it's they see our contract. Appraisers see the sales contract before they ever go to the property, so they know exactly what number they're trying to hit. And I don't feel sometimes that that's a true evaluation or opinion of the home value.
And didn't you say that there's a big difference in an appraiser appraisal for a refi and for
absolutely,
an initial buy?
Absolutely. A refi appraisal is technically sometimes they don't even come into the house. It's what we call a pencil appraisal. They do a drive-by. It does not hold as much weight. And a lot of times my sellers get upset by that. The other thing they get upset about is the Zestimate on Zillow that says their home is worth $385,000. And then I tell them, no, the actual sold comps
says
in
it's
your neighborhood. Yeah, Zillow. I want to say the S-U-C-K sucks word. Zillow sucks. That's not an accurate evaluation of your home either. So that's why I think talking to the appraiser is going to be really fascinating and what they're looking for. And also I recently, because of the COVID-19, I had an appraiser tell me that all appraisals were final, meaning that before, if they came out and said, you know, I'm going to appraise this house at the contract price, but it needs the wood rot replaced, or it needs a repair done, or the screen enclosure around the pool needs to be repaired, or they could say whatever they want. They're no longer going to do that. So I'm going to definitely ask him about those changes. All of the appraisals, from what he told me, are final and as is. So I hope you enjoyed the show
today. Before we close out, though, do you want to talk about one of your listings or something?
I did. I actually mentioned it earlier.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did.
I wasn't paying attention.
You weren't listening.
I wasn't listening.
Yes, I have a couple of townhomes and a condo coming, all in the 200 and under range, perfect for first-time home buyers.
I'm the producer. So. I'm just producing.
Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the information brought to you today. I'm Dora Seiler, Prestige Property Shop. Tune in next week. It'll be Ask the Appraiser. And hope you have a great day. She's just down the stairs.